This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12, and Mystery Hour is upon us. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial, or indeed upon this mortal coil. I mean, this is heady stuff. If you have a question bubbling away in the back of your brain, or perhaps even the front. In fact, this week we'll include the middle. Then give me a ring on the usual number, 0345 6060973. Ask me the question, endure my often clumsy attempts to answer it myself in pursuit of some faux impression of omniscience, and then park yourself for a few minutes and wait for someone who actually does know the answer to ring in and tell you what it is. There is no limit on what you can ask, if you see what I mean. It can be silly or serious. It could be something that you would probably need a PhD in applied mathematics to answer, or it can be something that you might be able to answer because you read it in the Beano last week. The point is that we are here to shine light into dark corners. And of course, if you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, then you don't have to ring in, but I'll be very upset if you don't, just on a sort of personal, let alone a professional level. 5 after 12. Should we crack straight on this week rather than... I mean, I did such an interminable monologue at the beginning of the programme today because there was so much important business to observe. You're not allowed to look anything up, obviously, I should say that, if you're thinking of answering a question. Some of the questions that pop through perhaps are Googleable, if that's a word, but the point of this feature is to sort of remember the days when knowledge mattered, when you had to actually know stuff. And it's, I do this every week, but the gulf between what our children do today and what we did when we were their age is almost unnavigable, isn't it? When you think about it, even the Six Wives of Henry VIII, if you didn't know it off by heart, what could you do? You'd have to ask someone or find a book that it was in. I mean, literally, younger listeners are going to be going, "You did what? You don't need to find a book. There's Six Wives. You just know it off by heart, or Pi. You know, 3.1415927. Is it? Thereabouts. Yeah. Why do you need to know? There's a button on your calculator if you're younger. 6 after 12. So that's the only rule. I used to have a ban on motoring-related questions, and it's still half a ban, but as I get older, I find some of my youthful prejudices falling away like so much flaky old skin. Cavan's in Chelsea. Cavan, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
What is the longest... after a football match, there's extra time. So what is the longest duration an extra time has lasted for?
You mean injury time, I think.
Injury time, extra time.
No, extra time is a finite period. It's two more halves of 15 minutes each, upon which you could also have more injury time added. But you mean at the end of the 90 minutes or the 120 minutes, what's the longest period of injury time?
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's all right. Yeah. It's just semantics, as what's his name would say. Was it Alok Sharma earlier this week when he was trying to pretend that Australia-style arrangements meant something other than no deal and the mask briefly slipped? I like that. Have you got any ideas yourself? Have you got any contenders?
I mean, I don't really know. I mean, clearly I don't know much about football, as you could tell.
No, but that's all right. I thought we'd glossed over that quite effectively, and now you're coughing to it, Kevin. I'd covered your back on that, mate, and now you've gone and blown it.
Yeah, but I still think it's quite an embarrassing mistake, even though you may excuse it.
Yes, it is quite. But still, injury time. Presumably, I mean, there must be a limit. It can't be infinite. It's tempting to think that it's infinite because you could have an infinite amount of time where play had been stopped. But for example, you probably wouldn't put it beyond floodlights coming on, or. I mean, how would 20-minute delay because of something awful had happened? I don't know. We'll find out. What's the longest period of injury time in professional football's recorded history? 0345 6060 973. Gav is in Malmesbury in Wiltshire. Gav, question or answer?
Hi, James.
Hello, mate.
It's the question.
Carry on.
I'm normally in Acton. It's Gav, your mate, Acton.
But, well played. Hey, THTC,
hey.
Gav.
Yeah, hey, mate.
How's business?
Okay, the question was, I'm thinking about packing it all in and living in a camper next year.
Are you really?
And yeah, very tempted.
Blimey.
Very tempted. Now, I'm not planning on doing anything illegal, but if you're living in a camper and you're parked up on the side of the road and the engine's not on, do the police need a search warrant to come in? or obviously if you're being pulled over, they can just search your car. If they knocked on the door and said they want to come in,
this is a fair. This might be one for Daniel Barnett's Legal Hour, Gav, rather than my Mystery Hour. But it's a very specific inquiry. So you're parked legally, are you?
So you're parked legally. But you're in an area
where you're not allowed to sleep, because you could park a camper van in some places, but you wouldn't be able to overnight there. So are you in a place where you are allowed to overnight? Because they might want to check that you're not overnighting.
Yes. Yeah, so say you're in a place that you Yes, that you are allowed to overnight.
Okay.
Can they just rock up, knock on the door and say, we believe that you're doing something illegal, we're going to search? Because it's a vehicle, but it's still a home. So they'd
but
need...
they can't do that in your house, so you want to know whether they can do it in a mobile home?
Yeah, I mean, in your house, if they've got a warrant, they can come and... they'd need a warrant. But they
I
need
think
a
they
warrant
would.
If they want to come
I mean,
and
everybody listening, Gav, is wondering what the hell you're going to be getting up to on your camper van, obviously.
It's not me, but I might have friends that are staying with me and are doing naughty things. Yeah.
So are you safe from spot checks on your home if your home has wheels?
Yeah, essentially.
Right. Okay, well, we need to have a catch-up. Obviously, there's a lot going on in your world.
There is.
Speak to you
all
soon.
Sorts,
you take it easy, mate. All right?
You too. Thanks, mate.
10 after 12 is the time. Are you... I mean, do you have any fewer rights in a mobile home than you have in a static home? 03456060973. Colin's in Billericay. Colin, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's about space travel. You know,
if you're
in space, there's sort of no up or down because of zero gravity. So has anyone decided which way up is in space? Because you see, like in Star Wars or Star Trek, they meet an alien spaceship and they're all up the sort of right way, aren't they? So
yeah, but just an absence of gravity.
Upside down,
I may be misunderstanding you here, but the absence of gravity doesn't mean that. Oh, so you're taking down as being... No,
We've decided, I think, because of the North Pole. You know, if you see any photos of Earth, it's always the North Pole's at the top. But I guess an alien coming along could be up the other way, and then to him, their top would be the South Pole.
The top of our planet. So that's what I'm confused about. So you're talking about our planet.
Well, our planet, we've decided North Pole is at the top. And I guess going to our solar system, all the planets are aligned that way. Well, you know, we go to Mars and it's the North Pole would be up for us.
Yeah.
But if we're going to do all this space travel and perhaps meet an alien craft...
Perhaps.
They could be the other way up. And then has anyone decided...
Well, no, I don't think anyone has decided... If we encounter an alien species, I don't think we've yet decided... I mean, that's for sovereignty in a nutshell, that, Colin, because you'd have to take the alien species views on board before you could actually put down a rule that would apply to both of you.
Yes, that's true, yes.
It's a beautiful illustration, the best illustration yet of why sovereignty is such a bogus argument in the context of Brexit, but I didn't expect it when you came on to ask which way up was in space.
That's a link to Brexit, I must admit.
Not did I, but it's a valid point. We'd have to listen to the aliens.
You've got to think about these things. You know?
Well, you kind of do.
When you get there and someone's upside down, that might be the way they really are.
That might be upside right, upside up
absolutely,
for them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want you losing any sleep about this, Colin, as I mean, on the list of things we should all be worrying about at the moment.
Do you ask for any questions, silly or serious?
In space, no one can hear you scream, we know that, but do we know which way is up and which way is down?
Thank you. Take care.
And you. 12 after 12 is the time. 03456060973. And yeah, I probably am the only man in the country who would manage to squeeze in evidence-based criticism of the Brexit nonsense in a light-hearted question about which way round is upside down in space. You're very welcome. Ian's in Warwick. Ian, question or answer?
Answer, James, please.
Already? Bring it.
The longest added time, it's called added time, was in the last couple of years, and it was a game at Burton in the Cup.
Burton?
The League Cup, and Burton Albion.
Yeah.
And it was about half an hour. I think the floodlights, they kept coming on and going off and coming on and going off.
So it wasn't even an injury.
Yeah, so it was that. But there's lots of the referee is the sole timekeeper in a game, and there's no actual time when he has to say right, that's it, that's too much. And I had a game many years ago that we waited 40 minutes for an ambulance to turn up to take a player away, and then we still carried on.
Right.
So they're probably on local parks pitches would be
even longer than 20. But you're looking at, what, 28 minutes, was it, did you say? Or
about half an hour. About half an hour.
And it, Burton Albion, can you remember who they were playing?
They were playing Southampton, I think.
Was it during Nigel's tenure as manager? Do we know?
I don't know. I
got my highest ever payout from a bookmaker when Burton Albion got a score draw with Manchester United, and it was such a remarkable bet. I can't even remember why I placed it, that they sent me a shirt signed by all the Burton Albion players.
Oh, wow.
From the bookies.
From the bookies?
Yeah.
Well done.
Well, so I never really, thankfully, fell under the spell of gambling, but for some reason I just fancied that for it. I must have won on something else and put all my winnings on Burton Albion getting a score. Anyway, I digress. Are you 100% sure that this is the answer?
It was recorded as the longest.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear. Yeah. No, and your qualifications are?
I am an FA match day observer.
What does that mean?
Used to be known as a referee assessor.
Okay.
So we go to football matches to watch the match officials.
So you are, are you an endangered species now with VAR?
No, because they used to have games, match assessors, as they were known, at division, the old Premier Championship or whatever. They don't use it now. They have evaluators watching tapes of the games or videos of the games on the top two divisions, but in League One and League Two, you've still got match assessors, and then I'm sort of the next level down.
Fantastic. Yeah. Round of applause for Ian.
Thank you.
Thank you. 12:15, we've got our first answer on the board before the first break. That's quite a good omen for the rest of Mystery Hour.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 19 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where someone has tweeted me a very helpful bit of footage from one of the Star Wars films, which puts Colin's question into slightly more digestible light. What Colin is essentially asking in this moving picture, this tweet from Whatever Word says, is the Millennium Falcon above or below the Star Destroyer? So if you're in space, right? And, I mean, you'd think that if it's above your head, then it's above the Star Destroyer. But why would you think that? You could be upside down. In fact, the Millennium Falcon often flies upside down, particularly when Chewbacca is at the controls. So, in space, which way is up and which way is down? I don't think there's an answer to this question, but I enjoy the curious sense of infinity that occurs when we ask it. 20 after 12 is the time. Questions that still need answers. There may be a steward's inquiry, which would be fair enough, actually, a VAR inquiry on the football question. Do the police need a search warrant to come into mobile homes, as in camper vans? 0345 6060 973. And in space, are you up? What's up and what's down? Ben's in High Wycombe. Ben, question or answer?
Hi, James. Hope you're well.
My question
is hopefully going to settle something from me and my partner. Mm. Is it true that you can get a cold from actually being cold, or is that an old wives' tale?
Oh, what a great question. Do you have children, if you don't mind me asking?
I've got a 4-month-old, yes.
Right, okay.
That's why we're talking about
it. I thought it might be, because then you've got that other thing where when they're a bit older and they get wet, and you say, oh, get inside,
exactly,
you'll catch your death. Every mum and dad in the world has said, you'll catch your death. Is it actually true? Because it's... It's germs, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's my argument, that it's germs. But her argument is no, Finn's caught it swimming, or you know, from being cold in the car or something like that, and hoping to prove her wrong.
Yeah, very well. It's a healthy relationship, if nothing else, Ben. Which you'll find out for you. Can you catch a cold via being cold? 0345 6060 973. I think we intuitively think we can, but that might be because we've been sort of brainwashed by our parents or our carers when we were young. Like, oh, you'll catch your death of cold. Can you catch your death of cold? Can you catch cold from cold? Oh, so I wouldn't have thought so, learning what I've learned about, you know, aerosols in the context of corona. Anyway, I digress. 21 after 12. Andrew's in Hammersmith. Andrew, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's to the question, police officers need a warrant to gain entry to a camper van or something?
Yes.
Essentially, they that they need a power of entry granted to them by some section of the law. It is considered a residency, and they would need some kind of power, not necessarily a warrant. So it could be under Section 18 of PACE or Section 32 of PACE, Section 18.5. Any of these could be granted to the officer to gain entry and indeed use force to gain entry to the mobile home.
But I couldn't, so I'd have to apply for that.
You don't have to apply for it. Section 32 would be upon arrest. So if he was at his, if he was there at the time of his arrest, it could be searched under Section 32.
No, but that, but you've got grounds for arrest. Sorry, I'm not picking holes, and neither am I planning anything, because I suspect you're a police officer. I want to make it clear, me and Gavin, who asked the question, both stand-up guys, never broken a law in our life, Gov. So I'm in my camper van, all right? I apologise for any mental images that this may be conjuring up in the minds of unsuspecting listeners. And you're a copper, police officer, a particularly good one, may I say. How excellent you look in your uniform. And you arrive at my mobile domicile with no suspicion at all or grounds to arrest me. You're not allowed in unless I invite you in.
Yes, correct. Just like a vampire.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be seconded to the PR team anytime soon, Andrew. but what if there was an exotic aroma emerging from my windows? Presumably, there you would be able. Would you be able to search my?
Yes.
Right. So
if there was an exotic aroma, you could do something there, and yes, that is possible. But it's like even if you were away from. So, like, if you were arrested at, say, a cafe away from your premises, if you were arrested, we could do it under Section 18, which is signed off by a police inspector, not by a court. So it's not a warrant, but it is still a legal power that we are allowed to go into and search your premises for.
Right, yes.
It also, extra fact, it also is considered a residency under the Theft Act, so it can be burgled because it is both being used as a residency and it has a degree of permanence.
Of course it does, yes. Oh, a comprehensive answer. You've swallowed PACE, which means I don't really need to ask you what your qualifications are, but I will do anyway.
I'm a police officer.
There you go. The smallest surprise of the day. Right, Andrew, great stuff, mate. Great. Can I ask you a silly question, which you're probably not allowed to answer?
Yeah, go on.
You can hear the tremulousness in your voice. They can go, all right, James, yeah, that'd be great, that'd be fine. the bridge being shut, which I appreciate is not a story of national import, but if you're in our neck of the woods, and I am, as you know, Andrew, then it's has that had any impact on policing?
To be honest with you, I don't know. The main impact that it's going to have on us as in policing is because prisoners are often scattered around the Met. It's us trying to get from one police station to another police station.
Yeah, of course.
And obviously the traffic impacts on police officers being able to get to places at high speed, etc. But it impacts in the same way as it impacts on pretty much everybody else. It's just getting to and from places.
Perfect answer. And you've already secured your round of applause. And enhanced the faith of the public in the thin blue line, Andrew, with your charm and decency. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. John's in Harrow. John, question or answer?
Hello, James. I've got a question on behalf of my son.
Okay.
He's studying the Middle Ages at the moment in school.
Is he?
And he's just come to the point where you've got the Black Death. And he's learned that the Black Death was spread by the fleas of rats.
Yes.
So the question he wants to know is, were the fleas actually affected themselves by the Black Death?
What a lovely question. What a bright lad you've got there.
Oh, well, I hope so.
or do they just carry it? Like, presumably the pangolin or whatever it was that introduced coronavirus to the human population. You'd ask a similar question. Did the pangolin suffer? But so does a flea carrying the bubonic plague have any symptoms is what we're asking, really?
That's it, essentially.
How old is your boy?
He's 10.
Is he really? And he's doing the Middle Ages already. 1665, was it, the Great Plague? I get my numbers the wrong way around.
I think they're doing the Black Death in the 14th century.
The one before. What am I thinking of? What am I?
The 1665 was another.
Oh, well, so many plagues, so little time, you know. One every 100 years or so. So did the fleas that carried the bubonic plague, did they have any symptoms of plague?
That's it.
And we'll find out from her. Brilliant stuff. Great
stuff. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, John. Give him our best. Give him our best. 27 after 12. I was about to recommend some historical fiction there, but I don't know that it's suitable for 10-year-olds because I find it the most wonderful way of smuggling historical knowledge in while you're actually reading a stone-cold page-turner. So S.J. Paris and C.J. Sansom for slightly older listeners would be my top recommendations. And I'm always on the lookout for more, by the way. I don't like this. I think this makes us guilty of a bit London-centric. It says here Andy's in Norfolk. Norfolk's huge. Whereabouts in Norfolk, Andy?
I'm in Thetford.
There you go.
Yes, how are you doing?
Very well indeed. Question or answer?
It's a question. It's probably quite a silly question, but it's something that's always bugged me. I'm a finance manager, so this sort of stuff doesn't really ever come into my head apart from on the odd occasion.
Yes, why Thursdays from 12, usually, I imagine.
Why is it, if you're in a dark room with the door open, so yeah, a really dark room, completely blacked out, you can see a lit-up room.
Yeah.
But if you're in the lit-up room, you can't see into the dark room.
Yeah.
It's probably something to do with light waves or eyes or the brain or some other wizardry or magic, but it's always been, especially in movies, in horror films, where you see a darkened doorway.
Yeah.
You can't see in, but the person who's inside can see out. That's just messed with my head, to be fair.
But isn't it... I may have misunderstood the question, so let me get that excuse in advance.
Okay.
But isn't it just because you can see what is illuminated, wherever you are?
That's what I've been trying to sort of get my head around. So is it to do with the light reflecting off surfaces and I'm probably answering my own question here.
I think you are.
I've never properly known the answer to it. That's why I'm asking.
I want to pinpoint precisely what you're confused by. Do you not understand why the light in the light room hasn't come into the dark room the minute the door was opened?
Yes. Yeah.
So that would be the waves. All right. Well, listen, this sounds to me like one of those questions that someone who really knows their stuff will understand and the rest of us don't.
Yeah.
So you get it intuitively and they'll get it scientifically and hopefully we'll be able to bring the two together.
Yeah, it's just the physical understanding of why that happens. Is it to do with the brain or the eyes or, you know, what's going on there? Yeah.
I love it. Nice one. Take care, Andy. Thank you. 29. Oh, taking us right up to 12:30 as well. So, why can you see a light room from a dark room, but not a dark room from a light room? 03456060973. It's about what light does and what eyes can see. But hopefully someone will be able to provide a fairly concise and yet comprehensive answer. Do fleas carrying the plague have any symptoms of plague? Can you catch cold from the cold? And when you're in space, which way is up and which way is down? It's 12:30. Bill Overton has the headlines.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 12:34. Mystery Hour continues. I'll remind you, a question still in need of an answer shortly, but we shall get a few more on the board first. Alan is in Birmingham. Alan, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, mate.
My question is, do dogs get hay fever sort of in the way that humans do?
Why do you ask?
Because we have a Labrador who, yes, in the summer, when he's running through the long grass, gets all sniffly.
Yes.
And so we were wondering that in the summer. We tried to phone in when it was all the kids' thing because our 10-year-old was fascinated by him sneezing everywhere.
Oh, that's terrible. I feel bad now. So
we tried on a long drive back from Wales and we couldn't get through. So
no, it went a little bit. Yeah, it went a bit nuts during Children's Mystery Hour. What's your 10-year-old called, just in case you play this clip back to them?
She's called Freya.
Freya. So, Freya, this is for you, not for your daddy. Don't let your daddy pretend that he was the one that came up with this clever question when everybody knows it was you, Freya. I know the answer, mate, because we've done it before, and it's not very exciting. It is a simple yes. They do. They do get hay fever, and you can treat it. Problems if it starts, because the skin gets irritated as well with some dogs, I think, but you get the full deal, the full human deal, runny eyes, sneezing, you know, itchiness, all of that. And it is hay fever. It's an allergy to pollen, just like the human equivalent.
There you go.
Yeah. Round of applause for me, actually. Do you know, I was wondering why you weren't providing me with a little bit more, because it's my job. Who's presenting today? Is it you or me in the chair today, Alan? Who's presenting the programme?
Well, I'm happy to hand over.
You're very kind. I can't believe you know about it.
You should mention it more.
I know I should. I talk about hiding your light under a book-flavoured bushel. Round of applause for me, and a big wave for Freya. Well played,
Thank
Freya.
You very much.
No, you take care, Alan. And there we go, from roughly the part of the country where I grew up to the part of the country where my first home was. Tom's in Doncaster. Tom, question or answer?
I have a question, please, James.
Carry on.
Why is non-fiction called non-fiction?
As opposed to?
The truth.
Or, well, factual. Might not be the truth. It could be non-fiction, but also not true, couldn't it? I suppose, in the context of an inaccurate biography. So, it's a good question, that, isn't it? So, because what came first?
I would have thought.
Non-fiction.
Fiction.
Would you? I don't want to get into an ontological or theological argument, but I often think in the West, at least, most books lead back to most book-based knowledge leads back to the Bible, which for the purposes of argument we'll call non-fiction.
Sure.
And that would, why is it called non-fiction as the negative of something else as opposed to a word all of its own, like simply factual or?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I know you were. I'm just trying to put some flesh on the bones of your question so that so that we can big up your part on the programme a bit more, Tom. You're welcome. I like that a lot. Do you want to know whether the book I have out today is fiction or non-fiction?
Yes, please.
It's non-fiction, actually, Tom. Non-fiction. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. I think he was asking that question in good faith. I don't think he was offering me an open door upon which to plug my book again, because as Tom and everybody else listening knows, I don't need any open doors. I can plug my book through a locked door. 12:38 is the time in all good bookshops right now. Shanice is in Watford. Shanice, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer.
Carry on, Shanice.
It's regarding the question about bubonic plague.
Oh, yes.
So neither the rats nor the fleas have any symptoms, so it's only harmful to humans or potentially other mammals, but I'm not entirely sure, but not to the rats or the fleas.
There was a bit of research not long ago, I think, that sort of tried to remove fleas from the equation altogether and claimed that it was human body lice that had been responsible for passing on the plague. But I don't think we need to worry ourselves with alternative theories today. What are your qualifications for knowing this, that neither rats nor fleas have symptoms of the plague they pass to humans?
So I have a degree in human biology and I wrote my dissertation on the potential for the reemergence of the plague and its transmission.
Oh, well, that'll do, won't it? Hang on, what did you get? Hang on a minute. What did you get in
I got a distinction, so I got 70.
70 on your... Was it undergraduate or master's level?
It was undergraduate.
Oh, I don't know if that's good enough. We're looking for a slightly higher academic calibre than a mere undergraduate dissertation, Shanice.
I have a master's.
Do you?
What's
your master's in?
It's in law. So yes. I have an LLM.
That's no use really to me. What was the title of your dissertation again?
Discuss the potential for the reemergence of the plague bacillus.
I'm teasing you. I'm actually contemplating giving you a Ray Liotta for this, because you have written a master's thesis on precisely the question, or very close to precisely the question that's popped up on Mystery Hour. I think that qualifies you for the highest accolade that radio can bestow upon a human being, Shanice. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I look forward to it.
Do you want to
I can provide more information if you'd like.
Shanice, you've not only knocked it out of the park, you've done a lap of honour and caught it again on your way back to the crease. I mean, this is an astonishing performance. Do you want to sit down? I don't want you to be... this might be a bit much for you. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
Here it is.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
That is the real... that is the real Ray Liotta from Goodfellas, Field of Dreams, the Hollywood legend recording.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. Indulging the juvenile fantasies of a second-rate radio presenter on British radio, the actual Ray Liotta. And we don't give them out very often, Shanice, so tell all your friends.
Oh, thank you. I will. I'm actually on my way into work, and I pulled over specifically so I could answer this question.
Well, look at that then. And now you're going to be on cloud nine all day because you got a Ray Liotta on Mystery Hour on LBC with me, James O'Brien. He's the real Ray Liotta. He came in. I should tell this. There's so many listeners now who weren't here when all this madness started. He came in to be interviewed by Steve Allen. He's quite a tough guy, as you'd imagine. And Steve, bless his little cotton socks, asked him to record it for us. And you could imagine him turning around and going, no way, stupid idea. Get out of here, Steve Allen. Don't know who that was either, sorry. But that was the real Ray Liotta, and we remain eternally grateful to him. 12:41 is the time. Well played, Shanice. Noel's in Harrow. Noel, question or answer?
A question, but with the slight stewards on the football one earlier.
Not allowed, not unless you've cleared it with the producer. Oh. And we both know you haven't. Noel. So carry on.
Question.
Yes.
In America, the Democrats are red and the GOP are blue. No, other way around.
Right.
And in Britain, we're Labour's red.
Yeah.
Socialism's red. Tories are blue. But it's the other way around in the States. And sort of seems worldwide, sort of communism's red.
Is it? And I don't know, actually. I wouldn't have, if you'd asked me in a pub quiz tonight what the colours were for the GOP and the... And the Democrats, I wouldn't know. And of course, there'll be plenty of people listening who would like me to point out that the Labour Party, in its current guise, is not a socialist movement, but these are mere semantics for some people. So the Democrats are red, and you want to know why, given that in the rest of the world, the party perceived as leaning to the left is usually the party that is associated. I mean, the red flag will have something to do with it, won't it? I would have thought.
But you think the red flag, you think... Communism, rest of the world, but in the States, it's
the Democrats.
The
so why are the Democrats
Republicans?
Red? Yeah, no, why are the Republicans red and the Democrats blue? Good question. I shall try and find out for you, Noel. Although, as I say, I'm ignorant of the parameters upon which your question is based. 12:43, or within which. Hanif is in Manchester. Hanif, question or answer?
Oh, hello, James. It's an answer.
Top man, carry on.
The question about the dark room and when you walk into a dark room.
It wasn't as stupid as it sounded, was it?
Well, it wasn't to me, but...
No, good.
Well,
go on, then.
Some people may not know. Yeah. The pupil right in the centre of your eyeball dilates. So when it's daylight, it dilates and it gets bigger and it lets more light in. And when you go into a dark room, it contracts and it goes very, very small.
Yes.
And it allows less light in. And it's that transition period between when you're going from a light place to a dark place. It takes about 15, 30 seconds for the pupil to dilate.
Yes.
That's why you can't see anything out there. And you can later on when it's pitch dark.
I think you've done it, actually. And I think you understood the question, which makes me intrigued about what your qualifications are.
I'm a doctor.
Okay.
I'm a retired doctor.
Well, that'll do. You sound too young to have retired.
I'm 55.
Put your shift in then and got over the line. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? Round of applause for Hanif, I think. Great work. And
Thank you.
The dilated pupil in the dark room is going to admit loads more light than the tiny little pupil in the light room. You just stare at a light and feel your pupil shrink, don't you? 12:44 is the time. I can tell you that it is being reported, and I think Sky News have just confirmed the Evening Standard's report that Rishi Sunak and Patrick Vallance will hold a press conference, or even a press conference, today at 4 p.m. from Downing Street. So that's exactly 3 hours before my live online book launch that you can find details of on my Twitter feed, at Mr. James OB. And, of course, the great thing about it is because it's virtual and online, despite having sold hundreds of tickets, it's impossible to sell out. So whatever time you decide that you're free this evening for an hour more of me, because let's all be honest, 15 hours a week of me is not really enough for you, you can join us tonight with Penguin Live and the tables being turned on my... full disclosure, I am being interviewed, and you get a book sent to you in the post as well if you sign on today. Car, you lucky people.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Rishi Sunak announces that Tier 2 employers will pay less and staff can work fewer hours before they qualify for government aid. The aim to help firms that haven't been made to close. But will it work?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we continue once again to solve some of the great mysteries of our time. And what a lot of fun we have together doing it as well. I just one little bit of politics. I do enjoy commentators who you can't predict what they're going to say next. I think they're probably the most valuable commentators. It's why I find Peter Oborne's journalism so magnificent. And Dan Hodges of the Mail on Sunday is heading towards that category. He's just doing lots of praise for Rishi, but this represents a political defeat. He resisted spending this cash, which is why some of the support is retrospective. And again, I'm not sure that's fair, but it's a perspective that I hadn't put out on this programme, so I'm happy to put it out there as well, because, you know, decisions taken in July don't work in October. That isn't embarrassing or failure. That's a recognition retrospectively of reality. And the reality wasn't recognisable then because it hadn't happened, I would say. Worrying that I sound like a Rishi Sunak fanboy, which I am categorically not. 12:51 is the time. John's in Dulwich. John, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on,
John. To the cold question.
Can you catch cold from cold?
You can't catch a cold from just being cold and wet, because colds are generally caused by viruses, yes. Rhinoviruses, various other types of viruses. Yes. But if you do get soaking wet and freezing cold, yes. It does have an impact on your body.
Right.
Your immune system is less able to produce, you know, the cells that it needs to fight off infection.
Got so. It.
Not directly, kind of indirectly.
So if there is a virus around the place and you're shivering and cold, you are more likely to fall victim to it than if you're feeling chipper.
You are, because your body's obviously only got a certain amount of energy that, yes. you know, to expend. And obviously if you're freezing cold, it's having to keep you warm, and it's less energy for it to spend on producing your immune response.
It's a perfect answer. Qualifications?
I've got a degree with the Open University, Life Sciences, and I studied infectious disease as part of that degree.
Infectious disease?
Yes, infectious disease.
I bet anyone who was a bit sceptical about your subject choice a few years ago is eating their words now, aren't they, John?
Well, it was a bit difficult sitting on the train, you know, with some of the course books and the looks I used to get, particularly with some of the diseases, but I won't go into that.
No, you don't need to. have you got any theories on coronavirus? Are you trying to work on a cure over in Dulwich?
No, I'll leave that to the real experts.
Like Donald. Yeah. Leave that to Donald Trump. He's got it all under control. Round of applause for John. What a great answer. Thank you, mate.
Thank you.
Mums are right and wrong at the same time. You will catch your death, or you could catch your death of cold if you don't warm up quickly, but it won't be because you're cold, it will be because of a virus to which you become more susceptible when your body is expending energy on doing other things like warming you up. A lovely answer. Joel's in Bush. A very academic flavour to Mystery Hour today with our theses and our Open University degrees and, of course, me. Joel's in Bushy. Joel, question or answer?
Hi, James. A question.
Carry on, mate.
Imagine you're on a plane. I know it's an old pastime.
Yes, those are flying days.
Above the clouds.
Hmm.
Why is it when you're flying close to the clouds, even though they're obviously not a formed object, if you could see contours on the clouds, how comes you're flying, it seems slower than if you're flying the same distance between the plane and the ground at the same speed?
So when you're cruising?
Yes. So when you're...
Why does it feel so slow?
Yeah, because if you're descending, I find it more, and you're just above the clouds, you can see the contour, you know, the
yeah.
some sort of form of the clouds going past really slowly. But if you find the same height from the ground, it would be a lot faster. You know, however fast it would be at the time, but it would be a lot faster.
No, I get it. And it's in relation to the clouds, because they're the only metric by which we can judge speed, aren't they? You need to see...
Exactly.
So, I like that a lot. And I recognise exactly what you say. When you're coming into land, it does feel as if you're slicing through the clouds at a rate of knots. But when you're cruising at X thousand feet... It's got quite a sort of almost a ponderous feel to it, like the sloths in that Disney film. Joel, great stuff. It's late now. We'll try and get you an answer. What else do we need answers? We've done the fleas. Clouds are on the board. Cold, we've done. Space, which way's up and which way's down in space? And why are non-fiction books called non-fiction? Where does that come from? And why do the Democrats in America buck the liberal trends of the rest of the world's political parties by adopting blue as their colour, and, of course, vice versa? Why are the Republicans red. Brian's in Bradford. Brian, question or answer?
Oh, hiya, James. It's an answer.
Oh, go on.
I'm dissenting from the
caller. It's a steward's inquiry, isn't it? I could tell from your voice there. There was a certain... Oh, go on. Which one?
Bubonic plague and the fleas.
Oh, no. Not Shanice. Let's hope she's already got to work. We don't want to spoil her day. If you're right and she's wrong, what do you want to tell me?
OK. So the question is whether fleas suffer any symptoms from the bubonic plague.
Yes.
Your earlier caller said no. I'm saying yes, they do.
Why?
Now, they're not the same symptoms as humans, but how the plague affects the rat fleas is their stomachs become filled with the bacteria.
Right.
This blocks their feeding tubes, which causes them essentially to starve to death. Oh. Now, this is important in the spread of the plague because rat fleas, by their nature, they only feed on rats.
Right.
But because of starving, they become less choosy on who they bite.
Oh no, this
is quite
an
important answer.
And
so when they turn their attention to the human host, that's how humans get it. You can only get bubonic plague by a bite. You can't get it through droplets in the air.
So the only, I mean, that is strong, isn't it? The only time a rat flea is likely to bite humans is when they aren't, they're biting lots of rat but not filling up and they don't understand why.
Yeah.
Qualifications?
So I got a master's degree in public health.
I knew I shouldn't have accepted her undergraduate qualifications. I said it at the time. I'm not taking away Shanice's Ray Liotta, but I am giving you a round of applause. Does that sound fair?
Do I not get a Ray Liotta?
No. Because her thesis was specifically on this subject, even though she might have made a mistake. Doing a master's degree in public health does not put you in a very small... If your thesis for your master's in public health had been about fat fleas, then yeah, you'd get a Ray Liotta.
Okay.
I mean, you sound ungrateful.
I might do a
Rishi Sunak on you now and take away the original offer because you've been so please ungracious don't. In accepting it. A round of applause for Brian, please.
Okay, James. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. Top man. Thank you. 12:57 is the time. Mark's in Santa Monica. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Mark.
And one that we can't find in the book that you just have published today, I hear.
Oh, it's very kind of you to mention. I don't think it's available in the States yet, but you should be able to get hold of the audio book or the Kindle version.
No, the Kindle one is, yeah.
Is it? Excellent. Phew, what a relief. I'm sure they're doing little else in the White House as we speak. Which one do you want to answer?
Of the red and blue thing.
Oh, yes.
I'll do it the US way round because, embarrassingly, I don't know the English way round.
No.
But I moved here between the two George Bush elections and I wondered the same thing. And I asked my immigration lawyer, and it was to do with the television media and print media going colour.
Okay.
So that's they needed colours to identify states as they turned.
Yes.
A bit like they show, you know, on
that's
English.
That's it, red map. States, blue states, yes.
Yeah, and so the notion of calling them red and blue only became solidified on the first George Bush election.
Is that right?
The first one in 2000. Prior to that, there were examples of the colours being reversed in like the early 70s, but the true solidification apparently only just happened as I moved here a few years before.
Oh, that's incredible. So it's a sort of televisual convention, really, nothing to do with ideology or politics.
No, in the newspapers. I think there is the sort of belief that red is the sort of, you know, the communist colour and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But that it was actually more the TV media and the fact that they went colour that actually necessitated the need for there to be colour associated with parties.
Perfect.
In America being such a sort of media-oriented country.
Sure. Mark, you've earned yourself a round of applause.
Thank you.
And
you
brought us in bang under time, which is splendid. Thank you, Mark. I think I know it. Yes. Anyway, we'll do it all again tomorrow morning from 10. The next voice you'll hear belongs to Sheila. But before I hand you over to her, just something for people who've been kind enough to stick with me over the last few years. You may have noticed that I've got a new book out today. And what I'm going to say to you next is something that some of you will completely understand and some of you won't. But neither have I, son. Here's Sheila.
I understand it. That's sweet. Best of luck with the book, James. Thanks very much indeed. It was completely missed. Those are the words of the Conservative mayor in the West Midlands, Andy Street. What was he talking about? The fate of businesses trying to operate in tier two conditions. That's what. COVID, social distancing, the rule of six, no household mixing, the 10 o'clock curfew. All been hobbling businesses for months. And when extra help was announced for areas in deeper tier three measures whose businesses were forced to close, tier two, rightly I think, cried foul. Rishi Sunak has announced a new scheme for them. Employers will pay less, taxpayer subsidy doubles, and workers can do fewer hours in order to be eligible. But will it work? Will it work for you? And where does this all leave areas like Greater Manchester and parts of the northeast of England who've effectively been in tier two conditions for, well, yonks?
Want to make the most of the extra hour when the clocks go back, so you don't want to get left in the dark by a faulty car bulb in the woods with whatever else is lurking out there. You want Halfords. We fit car headlight bulbs while you wait from £8. That's one bright spot this winter. Let us find it, fix it or fit it at over 750 stores and garages nationwide. Because if you want to keep moving this winter, you want Halfords. Fitting cost only.